Renovale on behalf of MCS Agency. In black and white, a caption appears set in a circle of stars, a Paramount picture. The words Sunset Boulevard are written across the curbstone of a pavement. Starring William Holden, Gloria Swanson, Eric von Stroheim. With Nancy Olsen, Fred Clark, Lloyd Goff, Jack Webb. And Cecil B. DeMille, Hedda Hopper, Buster Keaton, Anne Q. Nilsson, H.B. Warner, J. Livingston. Written by Charles Brackett, Billy Wilder, D.M. Marshman, Jr. Music by Franz Waxman. Directed by Billy Wilder. Headlights appear in the distance and speed down a deserted road.
Yes, this is Sunset Boulevard, Los Angeles, California. It's about 5 o'clock in the morning. That's the homicide squad, complete with detectives and newspapermen. A murder has been reported from one of those great big houses in the 10,000 block. You'll read about it in the late editions, I'm sure. You'll get it over your radio and see it on television. Because an old-time star is involved. One of the biggest. But before you hear it all distorted and blown out of proportion, before those Hollywood columnists get their hands on it, maybe you'd like to hear the facts. The whole truth. If so, you've come to the right party. You see, the body of a young man was found floating in the pool of her mansion, with 2 shots in his back and 1 in his stomach. Nobody important, really. Just a movie writer with a couple of B pictures to his credit. The poor dope. He always wanted a pool. Well, in the end, he got himself a pool. Only the price turned out to be a little high.
The body of a besuited man floats in the pool.
Let's go back about 6 months and find the day when it all started. I was living in an apartment house above Franklin and Ivar. Things were tough at the moment. I hadn't worked in a studio for a long time. So I sat there grinding out original stories, 2 a week. Only I seemed to have lost my touch. Maybe they weren't original enough. Maybe they were too original. All I know is, they didn't sell.
Joe Gillis is in a bathrobe. He sits there typing. He gets up to answer the door.
Joseph C. Gillis?
That's right.
We've come for the car.
What car?
1946 Plymouth convertible, California license, 40R116.
Where are the keys? Why should I give you the keys?
Because the company's played ball with you long enough. Because you're 3 payments behind. And because we got a court order. Now, come on. The keys.
Well, you want us to jack it up and haul it away. Relax, fans. The car isn't here.
Oh, is that so?
I loaned it to a friend of mine. He took it down to Palm Springs.
Oh, had to get away for his health, I suppose.
If you don't believe me, look in the garage.
Sure. We believe you. Only now we want you to believe us. That car better be back here by noon tomorrow. There's going to be fireworks.
You say the cutest thing.
The two guys leave. Joe leans against the wall and tears up the business card he was given.
Well, I needed about $290. I needed it real quick or I'd lose my car. It wasn't in Palm Springs, and it wasn't in the garage. I was way ahead of the finance company. I knew they'd be coming around, and I wasn't taking any chances. So I kept it across the street in a parking lot behind Rudy's shoeshine parlor. Rudy never asked any questions about your finances. He'd just look at your heels and know the score.
He parks the open-topped car on a quiet street and walks into Paramount Pictures.
I had an original story kicking around Paramount. My agent told me it was dead as a doornail. But I knew a big shot over there who'd always liked me. Time had come to take a little advantage of it. His name was Sheldrake. He was a smart producer with a set of ulcers to prove it.
All right, Gillis, you've got 5 minutes. What's your story about?
It's about a baseball player, a rookie shortstop that's batting 347.
Uh-huh.
Poor kid was once mixed up in a holdup, but he's trying to go straight.
Uh-huh.
Except there are a bunch of gamblers that won't let him.
So they tell the poor kid he's got to throw the World Series or else, huh?
More or less, except for the end, I got a gimmick that's real good.
Uh-huh. You got a title?
Bases Loaded. There's a 40-page outline.
Call Reader's Department. Find out what they have on Bases Loaded.
Sheldrake's secretary leaves.
They're pretty hot about it over 20th. Except I think Zanuck's all wet. Can you see Ty Power as a shortstop? You got the best man for it right here on this lot, Alan Ladd. Be a good change of pace for Ladd. And there's another thing. It's pretty simple to shoot. Lots of outdoor stuff. I bet you could make the whole thing for under $1 million.
Excuse me.
And there's a great little part for Bill Demarest. One of the trainers, an old-time player who got bean. Goes out of his head sometimes.
Hello, Mr. Sheldrake.
Hello.
On that Bases Loaded, I covered it with a 2-page synopsis.
Thank you.
But I wouldn't bother.
What's wrong with it?
It's from hunger.
Nothing for Ladd?
Well, it was just a rehash of something that wasn't very good to begin with.
I'm sure you'll be glad to meet Mr. Gillis. He wrote it. This is Miss Kramer.
Gillis walks up behind her.
The name is Schaefer. Betty Schaefer. Right now, I wish I could crawl in a hole and pull it in after me.
If I could be of any help.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Gillis, but I just didn't think it was any good. I found it flat and trite.
Exactly what kind of material do you recommend? James Joyce? Dostoevsky?
I just think that picture should say a little something.
Oh, one of the message kids. Just a story won't do. You'd have turned down Gone with the Wind.
No, that was me. I said, who wants to see a Civil War picture?
Perhaps the reason I hated Bases Loaded is that I knew your name. I'd always heard that you had some talent.
That was last year. This year I'm trying to earn a living.
So you take plot 27A, make it glossy, make it slick.
Those are dirty words. You sound like a bunch of New York critics. That'll be all, Miss Kramer. Schaefer.
Goodbye, Mr. Gillis.
Next time I'll write you The Naked and the Dead.
Well, seems like Zanuck has got himself a baseball picture.
Mr. Sheldrake, I don't want you to think I thought this was going to win any Academy Award.
Of course, we're always looking for a Betty Hutton. Do you see it as a Betty Hutton?
Frankly, no.
Now, wait a minute. If we made it a girls' softball team, put in a few numbers, might make a cute musical. It Happened in the Bullpen, Story of a Woman.
Are you trying to be funny? Because I'm all out of laughs. I'm over a barrel. I need a job.
I haven't got a thing.
Any kind of an assignment. Additional dialogue.
There's nothing. Honest.
Look, Mr. Sheldrake, could you let me have $300 yourself as a personal loan?
Could I? Gillis, last year somebody talked me into buying a ranch in the valley. So I borrowed the money from the bank to pay for the ranch. This year, I had to mortgage the ranch so I could keep up my life insurance, so I could borrow on my insurance.
Joe parks on a wide, busy road.
After that, I drove down to headquarters. That's the way a lot of us think about Schwab's drugstore. Kind of a combination office, coffee clutch, and waiting room. Waiting. Waiting for the gravy train. I got myself 10 nickels and started sending out a general SOS. Couldn't get hold of my agent. Naturally. So then I called a pal of mine, Artie Green, an awful nice guy, an assistant director. He could let me have 20, but 20 wouldn't do. Then I talked to a couple of yes men at Metro. To me, they said no. Finally, I located that agent of mine, the big faker. Was he out digging up a job for poor Joe Gillis? Huh. He was hard at work in Bel Air, making with the golf sticks.
A golf ball drops into a hole. Joe's with his agent.
So you need $300. Of course I could give you $300. Only I'm not going to.
No?
Gillis, get this through your head. I'm not just your agent. It's not the 10%. I'm your friend.
You are.
Don't you know the finest things in the world have been written on an empty stomach? Once a talent like yours gets into that Macambo Romanoff rut, you're through. Oh,
forget Romanoffs. It's a car I'm talking about. If I lose my car, it's like having my legs cut off.
Greatest thing that could happen to you. Now you'll have to sit behind the typewriter. Now you'll have to write.
What do you think I've been doing? I need $300.
Sweetheart, maybe what you need is another agent.
The two men confront each other, then Joe lowers his eyes, flips the ball back to his agent, and walks away downcast. Joe's driving along Sunset Boulevard.
As I drove back towards town, I took inventory of my prospects. They now added up to exactly zero. Apparently, I just didn't have what it takes. And the time had come to wrap up the whole Hollywood deal and go home. Maybe if I hawked all my junk, there'd be enough for a bus ticket back to Ohio. Back to that $35 a week job behind the copy desk of the Dayton Evening Post, if it was still open. Back to the smirking delight of the whole office. All right, you wise guys, why don't you go out and take a crack at Hollywood? Maybe you think that you could make...
He stops at traffic lights.
Uh-oh.
He sees the guys who came to his flat in a car on the other side. Joe lowers his sun visor, but the guys have spotted him. As the lights turn green, Joe drives off and speeds past their black car. They do a U-turn and drive after him. Anxiously, Joe checks his rearview mirror as he tears along a winding, deserted road with trees on each side. The guys in the black car in suits and fedoras look grim as they pursue him. Joe takes a bend at speed and a front tire blows. The car trundles across the road as Joe turns into a driveway. He stands up and looks behind him to see the black car speed by. Joe gets out and checks the tire.
I had landed myself in the driveway of some big mansion that looked run down and deserted. At the end of the drive was a lovely sight indeed. A great big empty garage, just standing there going to waste. If ever there was a place to stash away a limping car with a hot license number.
The car crawls along the drive of an unkempt courtyard and turns into the shade of a shabby garage. Joe parks and gets out.
There was another occupant in that garage. An enormous foreign-built automobile. It must have burned up 10 gallons to a mile. It had a 1932 license. I figured that's when the owners had moved out. And I also figured I couldn't go back to my apartment now that those bloodhounds were onto me. The idea was to get to Artie Green's and stay there until I could make that bus for Ohio. Once back in Dayton, I dropped the credit boys a picture postcard telling them where to pick up the jalopy.
He strolls into the overgrown garden and looks up at the house.
It was a great big white elephant of a place. The kind crazy movie people built in the crazy 20s. A neglected house gets an unhappy look. This one had it in spades. It was like that old woman in Great Expectations. That Miss Havisham in her rotting wedding dress and her torn veil, taking it out on the world because she'd been given the go-by.
At the top of some stone steps, he gazes at the huge Italianate house.
You there! Why are you so late? Why have you kept me waiting so long?
He makes out the figure of a woman behind a ragged straw blind. A bald man in livery steps out and waves him towards the entrance.
In here.
Joe looks around, then makes his way through an arched colonnade towards a wrought iron door.
I just put my car in the garage. I had a blowout. I thought maybe this...
Go on in.
Look, maybe I better take my car and get it off.
Wipe your feet. Go on.
The heavy-set man in a stiff collar and dark jacket gestures him into the house.
You're not properly dressed for the occasion.
What's the occasion?
Have him come up, Max.
Up the stairs.
Suppose you listen to me for just a minute.
Madame is waiting.
For me? Okay.
Joe smiles at the grim-looking man and springs up the sweeping, curved staircase.
Do you need any help with the coffin? Call me.
Joe stops in his tracks and looks over the banister. His expression changes, and with a worried frown, he walks slowly up the last few steps. He passes by an ornate lamp with a dim bulb. He looks along the gloomy corridor. The woman in a long black dress and dark glasses stands by a door. A candle in a tall stand flickers behind her.
In here. I put him on my massage table in front of the fire. He always liked fires and poking at them with a stick.
She leads him into a room with ornate furniture and drapes, over to a table covered with a patterned cloth.
I've made up my mind we'll bury him in the garden. Any city laws against that?
I wouldn't know.
I don't care anyway. I want the coffin to be white, and I want it specially lined with satin. White, or deep pink.
A hairy arm swings down from the table.
maybe red. Bright, flaming red. Let's make it gay.
She pulls back the cloth and Joe stares down at a dead chimp with its head on a frilly pillow. He gives the woman a quizzical look.
How much will it be? I warn you, don't give me a fancy price just because I'm rich.
Lady, you got the wrong man. I had some trouble with my car, flat tire. I pulled into your garage until I could get a spare. I thought this was an empty house.
It is not. Get out.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry you lost your friend. And I don't think red is the right color. Wait a minute, haven't I seen you before? I know your face.
Get out, or shall I call my servant?
You're Norma Desmond. Used to be in silent pictures, used to be big.
She dances the dance of the seven veils. He rejects her, so she demands his head on a golden tray, kissing his cold, dead lips.
They'll love it in Pomona.
They love it every place. Read it. Read the scene just before she has him killed.
Never let another writer read your material. He may steal it.
I'm not afraid. Read it. Max, bring something to drink. Sit down. Is there enough light?
I've got 20-20 vision.
I said sit down.
He seems unsure, then realizes she means it and sits.
Well, I had no pressing engagement, except with those boys from the finance office. And she'd mentioned something to drink. Why not? Sometimes it's interesting to see just how bad writing can be. This promised to go the limit. I wondered what a handwriting expert would make of that childish scrawl of hers. Max wheeled in some champagne and some caviar. Later, I found out that Max was the only other person in that grim Sunset Castle. And I found out a few other things about him. As for her, she sat coiled up like a watch spring, her cigarette clamped in a curious holder. I could sense her eyes on me from behind those dark glasses, defying me not to like what I read. Or maybe begging me in her own proud way to like it. It meant so much to her.
Sitting across the desk from him, she flings him a tight bundle of papers. Behind him, Max draws the curtains.
It sure was a cozy setup. That bundle of raw nerves, and Max, and a dead monkey upstairs, and the wind wheezing through that organ once in a while.
Max puts a fringed lampstand by Joe's armchair and walks down the column hallway to the door.
Later on, just for comedy relief, the real guy arrived with the baby coffin. It was all done with great dignity. He must have been a very important chimp. The great-grandson of King Kong, maybe.
Later, Joe's still reading in the gloom.
It got to be 11. I was feeling a little sick at my stomach, what with that sweet champagne and that tripe I'd been reading. That silly hodgepodge of melodramatic plots. However, by then, I'd started concocting a little plot of my own.
Well?
This is fascinating.
Of course it is.
Maybe it's a little long, and maybe there's some repetitions, but you're not a professional writer.
I wrote that with my heart.
Sure you did. That's what makes it great. What it needs is maybe a little more dialogue.
What for? I'm sending I want with my eyes.
Well, it certainly could use a pair of shears and a blue pencil.
I will not have it butchered.
Of course not. But it ought to be organized. Just an editing job. You can find somebody.
Oh, I'd have to have somebody I could trust. When were you born? I mean, what sign of the zodiac?
I don't know.
What month?
December, 21st.
Sagittarius. I like Sagittarians. You can trust them.
Thank you.
I want you to do this work.
Me? I'm busy. I just finished a script and I'm doing another assignment.
I don't care.
You know, I'm pretty expensive. I get 500 a week.
I wouldn't worry about money. I'll make it worth your while.
Maybe I'd better take the rest of the script home and read it.
Oh, no, I couldn't let it out of my house. You'll have to finish it here.
Well, it's getting kind of late.
Are you married, Mr.?
Name is Gillis. Single.
Where do you live?
Hollywood. Aldo Nido Apartments.
There's something wrong with your car, you said.
There sure is.
Why shouldn't you stay here?
Look, I'll come back early tomorrow.
Nonsense. There's a room over the garage. Max will take you there. Max!
Max leads him out to a flight of stairs covered with brambles.
I felt kind of pleased with the way I'd handled the situation. I dropped the hook, and she snapped at it. Now my car would be safe down below while I did a patch-up job on the script. And there should be plenty of money in it.
They enter a dark room with a double bed in it. Max turns on the light.
This room hasn't been used for a long time.
Well, it'll never make house beautiful, but I guess it's okay for one night.
I made you a bed this afternoon.
Thanks. How did you know I was going to stay this afternoon?
The bathroom is over there. I put in some towels, soap, and a toothbrush.
Max ignores him and runs his hand along the foot of the bed.
Say, she's quite a character, that Norma Desmond.
She was the greatest of them all. You wouldn't know. You're too young. In 1 week, she received 17,000 fan letters. Men bribed the hairdresser to get a lock of her hair. There was a Maharaja who came all the way from India to beg one of her silk stockings. Later, he strangled himself with it.
Well, I sure turned into an interesting driveway.
You did, sir. Good night, sir.
I pegged him as slightly cuckoo, too. A stroke, maybe. Come to think of it, the whole place seemed to have been stricken with a kind of creeping paralysis, out of beat with the rest of the world, crumbling apart in slow motion. There was a tennis court, or rather the ghost of a tennis court, with faded markings and a sagging net.
Joe looks out of the window at a cracked, empty swimming pool.
And of course she had a pool. Who didn't then? Mabel Norman and John Gilbert must have swum in it 10,000 midnights ago. And Vilma Bankey and Rod LaRocque. It was empty now. Or was it?
Rats fight over discarded food. He turns away in disgust.
There was something else going on below. The last rites for that hairy old chimp, performed with the utmost seriousness, as if she were laying to rest an only child. Was her life really as empty as that?
Norma and Max carry the coffin into the garden. Max hands her the candelabra and treads down the grave, then solemnly places the small white coffin.
It was all very queer. But queerer things were yet to come.
Joe's sprawled out on the bed in his clothes.
That night I had a mixed-up dream. In it there was an organ grinder. I couldn't see his face, but the organ was all draped in black, and a chimp was dancing for pennies. When I opened my eyes, the music was still there. Where was I? Oh, yes, in that empty room over her garage. Only it wasn't empty anymore. I'd had a visitor. Somebody had brought in all my belongings, my books, my typewriter, my clothes. What was going on?
Joe takes his jacket from its hanger, throws it on, and runs across the overgrown garden to the house. In the drawing room, Max is playing the organ in white gloves. Joe strides in.
Hey, you! Max, whatever your name is, what are my things doing here? I'm talking to you. My clothes and things are up in the room.
Naturally. I brought them myself.
Is that so?
Why, what's the matter? Is there anything missing?
Who said you could? Who asked you to?
I did. I don't know why you should be so upset. Stop that playing, Max. It seemed like a good idea if we are to work together.
Look, I'm supposed to fix up your script. There's nothing in the deal about my staying here.
You'll like it here.
Thanks for the invitation. I've got my own apartment.
You can't work in an apartment where you owe 3 months' rent.
I'll take care of that.
It's all taken care of. It's all paid for.
Okay, we'll deduct it from my salary.
Now, don't let's be small about such matters. We won't keep books. Max, unpack Mr. Gillis's things.
It is done, madame.
Well, pack him up again. I didn't say I was staying.
Suppose you make up your mind. Do you want this job or don't you?
Yes, I wanted the job. I wanted the dough, and I wanted to get out of there as quickly as I could. I thought if I really got going, I could finish it up in a couple of weeks. But it wasn't so simple getting some coherence into those wild hallucinations of hers. And what made it even tougher was that she was around all the time, hovering over me, afraid I'd do injury to that precious brainchild of hers.
Joe's typing at a desk. She sees him drop a sheet of paper into a box and walks up behind him.
What's that?
Just a scene I threw out.
Which scene?
The one where you go to the slave market. It's better to cut directly to John the Baptist.
Cut away from me?
Well, honestly, it's a little too much of you. They don't want you in every scene.
They don't? Then why do they still write me fan letters every day? Why do they beg me for my photographs? Why? Because they want to see me. Me, Norma Desmond. Put it back.
Okay.
She watches him as he retrieves it from the pile, then returns to her high-backed chair in a corner of the room. She signs photos of herself as a younger actress.
I didn't argue with her. You don't yell at a sleepwalker. He may fall and break his neck. That's it. She was still sleepwalking along the giddy heights of a lost career. Plain crazy when it came to that one subject, her celluloid self. The great Norma Desmond. How could she breathe in that house so crowded with Norma Desmonds? More Norma Desmonds. And still more Norma Desmonds. It wasn't all work, of course. Two or three times a week, Max would haul up that enormous oil painting that had been presented to her by some Nevada Chamber of Commerce. And we'd see a movie, right in her living room. So much nicer than going out, she'd say. The plain fact was she was afraid of that world outside. Afraid it would remind her that time had passed. They were silent movies. and Max would run the projection machine, which was just as well. It kept him from giving us an accompaniment on that wheezing organ. She'd sit very close to me, and she'd smell of tube roses, which is not my favorite perfume, not by a long shot. Sometimes, as we watched, she'd clutch my arm or my hand, forgetting she was my employer, just becoming a fan, excited about that actress up there on the screen. I guess I don't have to tell you who the star was. They were always her pictures. That's all she wanted to see.
Young Norma's face fills the screen in soft focus, hands clasped in prayer and eyes glistening with tears. Her lips move in silent speech and candles flicker in front of her. A caption appears, "Cast out this wicked dream which has seized my heart." She takes a new candle, holds it to the flame of another and lights it.
Still wonderful, isn't it? And no dialogue. We didn't need dialogue. We had faces. There just aren't any faces like that anymore. Maybe one, Garbo. Those idiot producers. Those imbeciles. Haven't they got any eyes? Have they forgotten what a star looks like? I'll show them. I'll be up there again, so help me.
She rises from the sofa and points at the screen with a melodramatic gesture, eyes flashing. Joe sits at Norma's side at a card game with three others.
Sometimes there'd be a little bridge game in the house at a 20th of a cent a point. I'd get half of her winnings. Once they ran up to 70 cents, which was about the only cash money I ever got. The others around the table would be actor friends, dim figures you may still remember from the silent days. I used to think of them as her waxworks.
One diamond. One heart.
Spade?
Pass.
Three, no trump. Pass.
Pass.
Empty the ashtray, will you, Joe, dear?
Exasperated, Joe gives her a sideways glance and picks up the full ashtray. He walks slowly over to the huge stone hearth and empties it into the fire. Out in the hallway, he catches sight of Max at the front door with two men, Joe's creditors. They leave. Max watches them go, closes the door, and walks slowly back to the room where Joe's hiding behind the doorframe.
There's some men outside. They asked for you.
I'm not here.
That's what I told them.
Good.
But they found your car in the garage, and they're going to tow it away.
Where's the ashtray? Joe, can't we have the ashtray?
He rejoins Norma at the table and leans over her to whisper. He hesitates.
Not now, my dear. I'm playing three, no trump.
They've come for my car.
Please, not. Now I've forgotten how many spades are out.
Look, I need some money right now.
Can't you wait until I'm done, eh?
No.
Please.
The two elderly actors at the table share a conspiratorial glance. Embarrassed, Joe leaves the table. Norma's eyes dart around at her guests. Joe wanders outside. He chucks away his cigarette and goes over to the stone steps. He stands watching as one of his creditors directs the driver of the tow truck. As his car is about to be towed, Norma joins him at the top of the stairs.
Now, what is it? Where's the fire?
I've lost my car.
Oh, and I thought it was a matter of life and death.
It is to me. That's why I came to this house. That's why I took this job, ghostwriting.
Now you're being silly. We don't need two cars. We have a car. Not one of those cheap new things made of chromium and spit. Masato Foschini. Have you ever heard of Masato Foschini's? All handmade. Cost me $28,000.
In the car on a bright day.
So Max got that old bus down off its blocks and polished it up. She'd take me for rides in the hills above Sunset. The whole thing was upholstered in leopard skin and had one of those car phones, all gold plated.
That's a dreadful shirt you're wearing.
What's wrong with it?
Nothing, if you work in the filling station, and I'm getting rather bored with that sport jacket and the same baggy pants. Max, what's a good men's shop in town? The very best. Well, go there.
I don't need any clothes, and I certainly don't want you buying them for me.
Why begrudge me a little fun? I just want you to look nice. And must you chew gum?
Norma's in dark glasses, a fur hat and fur-trimmed cape. Joe looks sulky and throws away his chewing gum.
Oh, there's nothing like blue flannel for a man. This one, single-breasted, of course. Now we need a top coat. Let me see what you have in camel's hair. How about some evening clothes?
I don't need a tuxedo.
Of course you do, a tuxedo and tails, and if you aren't careful, you'll get a cutaway.
Tails, that's ridiculous.
You need them for parties. You need them for New Year's Eve. Where are your evening clothes?
In this way, madam.
Here's some camel's hair, but I'd like you just to feel this. It's vicuna. Of course, it's a little more expensive.
The camel's hair will do.
Well, as long as the lady's paying for it, why not take the vicuna?
Joe glares at the smarmy salesman, who gives him a knowing smile. Joe looks shamefaced. The rain pours down outside the mansion.
The last week in December, the rains came. A great big package of rain. Oversized, like everything else in California. It came right through the old roof of my room above the garage. She had Max move me to the main house. I didn't much like the idea. The only time I could have to myself was in that room. But it was better than sleeping in a raincoat and galoshes.
As Max leaves the room with an umbrella and clothes over his arm, Joe packs a pair of shoes into a holdall. He looks around and remembers the camel hair coat hanging on the back of the cupboard. He puts it over his shoulders. Joe enters his new bedroom where Max is already putting his things away. The room is luxuriously furnished. A side table by a chaise has photos of Norma on it, and the huge bed has elaborately carved wooden pillars and headboard. Joe puts his bag on a chest at the foot of the bed and looks around. He takes off his coat.
Room is this?
It was the room of the husband. The husbands, I should say. Madame has been married 3 times.
Joe turns away and looks out of the window at the pouring rain.
I guess that's the one you can see Catalina from. Only this isn't the day.
Joe strolls around the room and goes to the door of the bathroom. He puts his head round, then notices a hole in the door where the lock should be. He pulls the door to.
Hey, what's this with the door? There isn't any lock.
There are no locks anywhere in this house, sir.
Max points to the doors to another room and the double doors to Joe's bedroom. They're all the same.
How come? There must be a reason.
The doctor suggested it.
What doctor?
Madame's doctor. Madame has moments of melancholy. There have been some attempts at suicide.
Oh.
We have to be very careful. No sleeping pills, no razor blades. We shut off the gas in Madame's bedroom.
Why, Career? She got enough out of it. She's not forgotten. She still gets those fan letters.
I wouldn't look too closely at the postmarks.
You send them. Is that it, Max?
I better press your evening clothes, sir. Mr. Gillis has not forgotten Madame's New Year's party.
No, I haven't. I suppose all the waxworks are coming.
I wouldn't know, sir. Madame made the arrangements.
Max goes. Joe wanders over to the doors to the other room and slowly opens one. He looks in on a room with a blazing fire in the grate.
There it was again. That room of hers. All satin and ruffles, and that bed like a gilded rowboat. The perfect setting for a silent movie queen. Poor devil, still waving proudly to a parade which had long since passed her by.
Joe comes down the curving staircase in his tails.
It was at her New Year's party that I found out how she felt about me. Maybe I'd been an idiot not to have sensed it was coming. That sad, embarrassing revelation.
Norma is dancing alone to a quartet playing at one end of the drawing room.
Joe!
Dressed in a billowing floor-length gown, she dances over to him.
You look absolutely divine. Turn around. Oh,
please.
Come on. Perfect. Wonderful shoulders. I love that line.
It's all padding. Don't let it fool you.
Yeah.
You know, to me, getting dressed up was always just putting on my dark blue suit.
I don't like the stud they send. I want you to have a pearl, a big luscious pearl.
Well, I'm not going to wear earrings, I can tell you that.
Cute. Come on, let's have a drink.
Shouldn't we wait for the others?
Max, champagne. Careful, it's slippery. I had it waxed. Here's to us. You know, this floor used to be wood, but I had it changed. Valentino said there's nothing like tile for a tango. Come on.
Not on the same floor with Valentino.
Just follow me.
She leads him onto the dance floor. He puts his arm around her and they glide around the highly polished floor. She wears heavy jewelry round her neck and on one wrist. A veil of netting trails from her hair, pinned on by a diamond clasp. Joe dances awkwardly.
Don't bend back like that.
It's that thing. It tickles.
It does.
She grabs the clasp and pulls the netting from her hair. She throws it on the floor. They dance past it. Max comes to pick it up in gloved hands. He narrows his eyes as he watches them from the sidelines. Norma rests her head on Joe's shoulder and closes her eyes. Joe looks around, then checks his watch.
It's 10:15. What time are they supposed to get here?
Who?
The other guests.
There are no other guests. We don't want to share this night with other people. This is for you and me.
Oh?
Hold me tighter.
Okay. Come midnight, how about blindfolding the orchestra and smashing champagne glasses over Max's head?
You think this is all very funny?
A little.
They sweep around the empty dance floor, which is surrounded by candles, huge bouquets of flowers, and food laid out on long tables.
An hour dragged by. I felt caught like the cigarette in that contraption on her finger.
Norma sprawled out on the sofa with her feet on Joe's lap.
What a wonderful next year it's going to be. What fun we'll have. I'll fill the pool for you. I'll open my house in Malibu and you have the whole ocean. And when our picture's finished, I'll buy you a boat and we'll sail to Hawaii.
Stop it. You're not going to buy me anything more.
Don't be silly. Here. I was going to give it to you at midnight.
She gives him a cigarette case.
Norma, I can't take it. You bought me enough.
Shut up. I'm rich. I'm richer than all this new Hollywood trash. I've got $1 million.
Keep it.
I own 3 blocks downtown. I've got oil in Bakersfield. Pumping, pumping, pumping. What's it for but to buy us anything we want?
Cut out that us business.
What's the matter with you?
What right do you have to take me for granted?
What right? You want me to tell you?
Has it ever occurred to you that I may have a life of my own, that there may be some girl that I'm crazy about?
Who? Some car hop or dress extra?
What I'm trying to say is that I'm all wrong for you. You want a Valentino, somebody with polo ponies, a big shot.
What you're trying to say is you don't want me to love you. Say it. Say it.
She slaps his face and with a wild-eyed stare sweeps off. He watches her go and catches her reflection in an ornate ormolu mirror in the hall as she rushes up the grand curved staircase. She stumbles towards her bedroom. The hole in the door in place of the lock casts a disc of light on the outer doorframe. Downstairs in the hall, Joe glances at the quartet of musicians. He turns and notices Max watching him from behind a long table, laden with silver food dishes and a large cake. Max lowers his eyes and polishes a champagne glass. With a grim, set expression, Joe walks out of the flower-filled room, takes his camel hair coat from a cupboard, and walks across the tiled hall towards the wrought iron entrance. He pauses, turns to glance up the stairs, then catching his watch chain on the handle, leaves the house. It's a rainy night.
I didn't know where I was going. I just had to get out of there. I had to be with people my own age. I had to hear somebody laugh again. I thought of Artie Green. There was bound to be a New Year's shindig going on in his apartment down in Las Palmas. Writers without a job, composers without a publisher. actresses so young they still believe the guys in the casting office. A bunch of kids who didn't give a hoot, just so long as they had a yuck to share.
He gets in a taxi.
Hollywood for us ain't rent so good. Got no swimming pool, very few clothes. All we earn are buttons and bows.
Hello, Joe. Tom.
Hi, Joe.
Welcome to the party.
Hi, Joe. Well, what do you know? Joe Gillis.
Hi, Artie. Where you been keeping that gorgeous face of yours?
In a deep freeze.
I almost reported you to the Bureau of Missing Persons. Fans, you all know Joe Gillis, the well-known screenwriter, uranium smuggler, and Black Dahlia suspect. Come on, give me your coat.
Oh, let it ride for a while.
Well, you're going to stay, aren't you?
Well, that was the general idea.
Well, come on. What is this, mink? Judas H. Priest. Who did you borrow that from? Adolf Manju?
Close, but no cigar.
Say, you're not really in the smuggling business these days, are you?
Where's the bar? It's a good party.
The greatest. They call me the Elsa Maxwell of the assistant directors. Hey, wait a minute. Go easy on that punch bowl. Budget only calls for 3 drinks per extra. Fake the rest.
Say, Artie, can I stick around here for a while?
Oh, sure. This'll go on all night.
No, I mean, can you put me up for a couple of weeks?
It just so happens we have a vacancy on the couch.
I'll take it.
I'll have the bellhop take care of your luggage. Just, register here.
Artie traces a line on a young woman's back.
Hello, Mr. Gillis.
Hello.
You know each other?
Let me help you. Betty Schaefer, Sheldrake's office?
Oh, sure. Base is loaded.
Wait a minute. This is the woman I love. What's going on? Who was loaded?
Don't worry, she's just a fan for my literary output.
Hurt feelings department.
Hey, about that luggage, where's the phone?
Over by the rainbow room.
Joe puts down his punch glass and makes for the phone. Betty picks up his glass. A blonde is on the phone with a friend next to her.
Say, when you're through with that thing, can I have it?
The girl nods. He walks away and Betty joins him with his drink.
Hey, you forgot this.
Thanks.
I've been hoping to run into you.
What for? To recover that knife you stuck in my back?
No, I felt a little guilty, so I got out some of your old stories.
Why, you sweet kid.
There's one called Window, something with a window.
Dark Windows. How'd you like it?
Oh, I didn't.
Thank you.
Except for about 6 pages. You've got a flashback there. Is there someplace we can talk?
How about the rainbow room?
They head to the bathroom.
Hey, Joe. I said you could have my couch. I didn't say you could have my girl.
Oh, this is shop talk.
Now, if I got you correctly, there's a short stretch of my fiction which you found worthy of notice.
The flashback scene in the courtroom when she tells about being a school teacher.
I had a teacher like that once.
Well, maybe that's why it's good. It's true, it's moving. Now, why don't you use
Who
that
wants
character?
True? Who wants moving?
Drop that attitude. Here's something really worthwhile.
Want me to start right away? Maybe there's some paper around.
I'm serious. I've got a few ideas.
And I got a few ideas of my own. One of them being this is New Year's Eve. How about living it up a little?
As for instance?
Well,
we could make some paper boats and have a rudder. Or we could turn on the shower, full blast.
How about capturing the kitchen and barricading the door?
Are you hungry?
Hungry? After 12 years in the Burmese jungle, I'm starving, Lady Agatha. Starving for a wet shoulder.
Philip, you're mad.
Thirsting for the coolness of your lips.
You can have the phone now.
No, Philip, no, we must be strong. You're still wearing the uniform of the Coldstream Guards. Furthermore, you can have the phone now.
Okay. Suddenly, I find myself terribly afraid of losing you.
You won't. I'll get us a refill of this horrible liquid.
You'll be waiting for me.
With a wildly beating heart.
Life can be beautiful.
He backs out dramatically, sits down by the phone, and dials.
Hello, Max. This is Mr. Gillis. I want you to do me a favor.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gillis. I cannot talk now.
Yes, you can. I want you to get my old suitcase and put in all my old clothes, the ones I came with, and my typewriter. I'll have somebody pick them up.
I have no time to do anything now. The doctor is here.
What doctor? What's going on?
Madame got the razor from your room and she cut her wrists.
What? Max! Max!
Stunned, Joe slowly replaces the phone and stares ahead of him. Betty comes over with 2 refilled glasses.
I just got the recipe. You take take 2 packages of cough drops and dissolve in 1 gallon of lukewarm grape juice.
Joe fights his way through the crowded room, grabs his coat, and dashes out.
Hey, Joe!
The taxi pulls up in Norma's driveway. Joe pays the driver and runs. The driver calls out.
Happy New Year!
Inside, Max and the doctor are coming downstairs as Joe runs in.
How is she?
She's up in her room. Careful, don't race upstairs. You musicians mustn't know what happened.
Outwardly calm, Joe takes the stairs 2 at a time and, still in his damp coat, slowly approaches Norma's bedroom. He runs his hand through his wet hair, then gently pushes the door open. Wearing her chiffon gown, Norma stretched out on top of the ornate bed, her wrists wrapped in bandages. Joe goes to the foot of the bed, studies her anxiously, then carefully removes her shoes. Guilt-ridden, he turns away and flings her shoes onto a chaise in a corner of the room.
What kind of a silly thing was that to do?
To fall in love with you, that was the idiotic thing.
Sure would have made attractive headlines. Great star kills herself for unknown writer.
Great stars have great pride.
Melodramatically, she drapes a bandaged arm over her eyes.
Go away. Go to that girl of yours.
Look, I was making that up because I thought the whole thing was a mistake. I didn't want to hurt you. You've been good to me. You're the only person in this stinking town that has been good to me.
Why don't you just say thank you and go? Go, go!
Not until you promise to act like a sensible human being.
I'll do it again. I'll do it again. I'll do it again.
He gazes at her, then turns and walks back to the chaise. He sits down and, hunched over, takes in the room and the ornately carved gondola-shaped bed. He rises, approaches the bed, and sits down on the edge. He gently lifts her arms away from her face and leans close to her.
Happy New Year, Norma.
Slowly, she opens her eyes and looks up at him through her tears.
Happy New Year, darling.
With a predatory gesture, she reaches out a long-nailed hand, clasps his lapel, and pulls him towards her. It's daytime, and Max, in a white jacket, is walking through the hall.
Hello?
Is this Crestview 51733? I'm sorry to bother you again, but I've confirmed the number. I must speak to Mr. Gillis.
He's not here.
Well, where can I reach him? Maybe somebody else in the house could tell me.
Nobody here can give you any information. And you will please not call again.
Max!
Norma calls from the garden.
Who was it, Max? What is it?
Nothing, madame. Somebody inquiring about a stray dog. Our number must be very similar to the number of the pound.
Wait a minute. I want you to get out the car. You're to take the script over to Paramount and deliver it to Mr. DeMille in person.
Very good, madam.
Joe climbs out of the pool and steps over to Norma lying on her sunbed.
You really going to send that script to DeMille?
Yes, I am. This is the day. Here's the chart from my astrologer. She read DeMille's horoscope, she read mine.
She read the script?
DeMille is Leo. I'm Scorpio. Mars has been transiting Jupiter for weeks. Today is the day of the greatest conjunction. Turn around, darling. Let me dry you.
I hope you realize, Norma, that scripts don't sell on astrologers' charts.
I'm not just selling the script, I'm selling me. DeMille always said I was his greatest star.
When did he say it, Norma?
All right, it was quite a few years ago. But the point is, I never looked better in my life. You know why? Because I've never been as happy in my life.
She wraps the towel round his shoulders. They're in the car.
A few evenings later, we were going to the house of one of the waxworks for some bridge. She taught me how to play bridge by then, just as she taught me some fancy tango steps and what wine to drink with what fish.
That idiot, he forgot to fill my cigarette case.
Here, have one of mine.
They're dreadful. They make me cough.
Pull up the drugstore, will you, Max?
I'll get you some.
You're a darling.
She searches through her bag for money and hands him a bill. He takes it from her with a resentful glance. Max stops the car outside Schwab's pharmacy. Joe enters the brightly lit store in his dinner jacket and bow tie and goes over to a woman behind the counter.
Give me a package of those turkey cigarettes, Abdullah's.
Stick them up, Gillis. Stick them up or I'll let you have it.
Hi, Artie.
Evening, Miss Schaefer.
You don't know how glad I am to see you.
Walking out on the mob, what's the big idea?
Oh, I'm sorry about New Year's. Would you believe me if I told you I stayed with a sick friend?
Someone in the formal set, no doubt, with a 10-carat kidney stone.
Oh, stop it, Artie, will you? Where have you been keeping yourself? I've got the most wonderful news for you.
I haven't been keeping myself at all, not lately.
I called your agent. I called the Screenwriters Guild. Finally, your old apartment gave me some Crestview number. It was always somebody with an accent growling at me. You were not there. You were not to be spoken to. They never even heard of you.
Is that so? What's the wonderful news?
Sheldrake likes the angle about the teacher.
What teacher?
Dark Windows. I got him all hopped up about it. He thinks it could be made into something.
Okay, where's the cash?
Where's the story? I bluffed it out with a few notions of my own. It's really just a springboard. It needs work.
I was afraid of that.
I've got 20 pages of notes, and I've got a pretty good character for the man.
Could you write in plenty of background action so they'll need an extra assistant director, huh?
Oh, Artie, shut up. Now, if we could sit down for 2 weeks to get a story...
I'm sorry, Miss Schaefer. I've given up writing on spec.
But I tell you, this is half sold.
As a matter of fact, I've given up writing altogether.
Mr. Gillis, if you please.
I'll be right there.
The accent. I get it. This guy's in the pay of a foreign government. Check those studs. Get those cufflinks.
I've got to run along. Thanks anyway for your interest in my career.
It's not your career, it's mine. I kind of hope to get in on this deal. I don't want to be a reader all my life. I want to write.
I'm sorry if I crossed you up.
You sure have.
So long.
Joe goes back to the old-fashioned car.
What on earth, Dad, took you hours?
Oh, I ran into some people I know.
Where are my cigarettes?
Where are you?
He looks at her outstretched gloved hand.
Norma, you're smoking too much.
He gives her back the money.
Whenever she suspected I was getting bored, she would put on a live show for me. The Norma Desmond Follies. Her first number was always the Max Sennett Bathing Beauty.
Stretched out on the sofa, Jo looks bored as she twirls her parasol, then dives on top of him.
I can still see myself in the line. Marie Prevost, Mabel Normand. Mabel was always stepping on my feet. What's the matter with you, darling? Why are you so glum?
Nothing's the matter. I'm having a great time. Show me some more.
All right. Give me this. I need it for a mustache. Now close your eyes. Close them.
She takes the dead match and gets up, leaving him lying on the sofa with his eyes closed.
Something was the matter, all right. I was thinking about that girl of Artie's, that Miss Schaefer. She was so like all us writers when we first hit Hollywood, itching with ambition, panning to get your names up there, screenplay by, original story by. Audiences don't know somebody sits down and writes a picture. They think the actors make it up as they go along.
Open your eyes!
He turns as Norma waddles into the room. She's dressed as Charlie Chaplin in a bowler hat, frock coat, swinging a cane, and with a moustache drawn on her top lip. Joe watches her in disbelief as she winks at him, then pretends to clean her nails with the tip of the cane and flicks some imaginary dirt from her eye. Max walks in wearing an apron and holding a feather duster. She turns.
Madame is wanted on the telephone.
You know better than to interrupt me.
Paramount is calling.
Who?
Paramount Studios.
Now do you believe me? I told you DeMille would jump at it.
It is not Mr. DeMille in person. It is someone by the name of Gordon Cole. He says it's very important.
Certainly it's important. It's important enough for Mr. DeMille to call me personally. The very idea of having some assistant call me. Say I'm busy and hang up.
Very good, madam.
She looks furious as she prowls over to Joe.
How do you like that? We've made 12 pictures together. His greatest successes.
Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's shooting.
Oh, I know that trick. He's trying to belittle me. He's trying to get my price down. I've waited 20 years for this call. Now DeMille can wait until I'm good and ready.
Joe's in the car with a glamorous Norma.
About 3 days later, she was good and ready. Incredible as it may seem, there'd been some more of those urgent calls from Paramount. So she put on about a half a pound of makeup, fixed it up with a veil, and set forth to see DeMille in person.
Max looks in the rearview mirror.
Madame will pardon me. The shadow over the left eye is not quite balanced.
Thank you, Max.
She dabs at her eye with a handkerchief. Max drives on, then stops outside the gates of the grand entrance to Paramount Pictures.
Hold that boy!
Hey!
You see, Mr. DeMille, open the gate.
Mr. DeMille is shooting. You got an appointment?
No appointment necessary. I'm bringing Norma Desmond.
Norma who?
Norma Desmond.
Jonesy! Hey, Jonesy!
Yeah? Why, if it isn't Miss Desmond. How have you been, Miss Desmond?
Open the gate.
Sure, Miss Desmond. Come on, Mac.
They can't drive on the lot without a pass.
Miss Desmond can. Come on.
The guards open the gates and the car glides in, then stops.
Where's Mr. DeMille shooting?
Stage 18, Miss Desmond.
Thank you, Jonesy. And teach your friend some manners. Tell him without me, he wouldn't have any job, because without me, there wouldn't be any Paramount Studio.
You're right, Miss Desmond.
Go on, Max.
As they drive in, Jonesy smiles to himself and goes over to a phone on the wall.
Stage 18.
All right, get over by Henry Wilcox. Just clear a minute, will you? Spread the thing out so I can see it.
In the busy studio, one of the crew hangs up the phone.
Norman Desmond's coming in to see Mr. DeMille.
The guy behind the desk makes his way between lights and actors and exotic costumes. He goes up to a casually dressed man looking over some boards with a well-dressed woman.
Norman Desmond's coming in to see Mr. DeMille.
Norman Desmond? Wait a minute.
Harry Wilcox, draw your sword and raise that drape with us. The Sampson's lying unconscious over here.
Norma Desmond is coming in to see you, Mr. DeMille.
Norma Desmond?
She must be a million years old.
I hate to think where that puts me. I could be her father.
Very sorry, Mr. DeMille.
It must be about that awful script of hers. What can I tell her? What can I say?
I can tell her you're all tied up in the projection room. I can give her the brush.
30 million fans have given her the brush. Isn't that enough?
I didn't mean to.
No, of course you didn't. You didn't know Norma Desmond as a lovely little girl of 17 with more courage and wit and heart. They never came together in one youngster.
I understand she was a terror to work with.
Only toward the end. You know, a dozen press agents working overtime can do terrible things to the human spirit.
Hold it.
The car pulls up outside the studio.
Don't you want to come along, darling?
I don't think so. It's your script. It's your show. Good luck.
Thank you, dearest.
Well, hello, young fella.
Hello, Mr. DeMille.
It's good to see you.
The last time I saw you was someplace very gay. I remember waving to you. I was dancing on a table.
A lot of people were. Lindbergh had just landed in Paris.
They link arms and he escorts her in.
Norma. I must apologize for not calling you.
You'd better. I'm very angry.
Well, you can see I'm terribly busy.
That's no excuse. You read the script, of course?
Yes, I did.
Then you could have picked up the telephone yourself instead of leaving it to one of your assistants.
Hmm? What assistants?
Now, don't play innocent. Somebody named Gordon Cole.
Gordon Cole?
And if you hadn't been pretty darn interested in that script, he wouldn't have tried to get me on the telephone 10 times.
Gordon Cole? Norma, I'm in the middle of a rehearsal. Now, why don't you just sit up here in my chair and make yourself comfortable, hmm?
Thank you.
That's a girl. I won't be a moment. Bring me a telephone and get me Gordon Cole.
Right.
Norma sits in the raised chair and imperiously casts her eyes around the studio. A microphone on a long arm slides by behind her and brushes the feather in her hat. She looks around and, irritated, pushes it away. A guy calls from the gantry overhead.
Hey, Miss Desmond! Miss Desmond! It's me! It's Hawkeye!
Hello, Hawkeye!
He turns a huge spotlight in her direction.
Let's get a good look at you!
An actor on set notices her.
There's Norma Desmond.
Norma Desmond. Norma Desmond.
Why, I thought she was dead.
How nice to see you.
Welcome home, mister. You remember me, don't you?
Miss Desmond.
Hello.
They crowd around her.
It's a great pleasure.
Oh, Gordon, this is C.B. DeMille. Have you been calling Norma Desmond?
Yes, Mr. DeMille. It's that car of hers, an old Isotta Fraschini. Her chauffeur drove it in on the lot the other day. It looks just right for the Crosby picture. We want to rent it for a couple of weeks.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
DeMille hands the phone to his assistant and looks anxious as he trudges back to the crowd around Norma. Someone hands him a microphone.
Okay. Turn that light back where it belongs.
The beam swings away from her and the crowd disperses. DeMille perches on a stool next to her and smiles.
Well, I got hold of Gordon Cole.
Did you see them? Did you see how they came?
You know, some crazy things happen in this business, Norma. I hope you haven't lost your sense of humor. What's the matter, dear?
Nothing. I just didn't realize what it would be like to come back to the old studio. I had no idea how much I missed it.
We've missed you too, dear.
We'll be working again, won't we, Chief? We'll make our greatest picture.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk to you
about.
It's
a good script, isn't it?
It has some good things in it, yes, but it'll be a very expensive picture.
Oh, I don't care about the money. I just want to work again. You know what it means to know that you want me.
Nothing would please me more, Norma, if it were possible.
And remember, darling, I don't work before 10 in the morning and never after 4:30 in the afternoon.
We're ready with the shot, Mr. DeMille.
All right. Norma, why don't you just sit here and watch? You know, pictures have changed quite a bit.
All right, let's go. Get them all! Hold them! Speed!
Outside, Joe is in the car. He seems tense. Max, dressed in chauffeur's livery with breeches and peaked cap, is pacing.
You see those offices there, Mr. Gillis? They used to be Madame's dressing room. The whole row.
That didn't leave much for Wallace Reed.
Oh, he had a great big bungalow on wheels. I had the upstairs. You see where it says Reader's Department? I remember my walls were covered with black patent leather.
Joe looks up at the raised walkway and sees Betty walking by. He turns away and covers his face with his hand.
I'll be with you in a minute.
Joe gets out. Max stands by the car and looks around. A couple of guys come over to him.
Hey, here's that funny car Gordon Cole was talking about.
Yeah.
Mind if we look it over?
What's so funny about it?
Upstairs, Betty's in an office at a typewriter. She doesn't hear Joe come in. He leans in the doorway.
Just so you don't think I'm a complete swine, if there's anything in Dark Windows you can use, take it. It's all yours.
Well, for heaven's sakes. Come on in. Have a chair.
I mean it. It's no good to me anyway. Help yourself.
Now, why should you do that?
If you get $100,000 for it, you buy me a box of chocolate creams. If you get an Oscar, I get the left foot.
You know, I'd take you up on that in a minute. I'm just not good enough to do it all by myself.
What about all those ideas you had?
Well, see if they make sense. To begin with, I think you should throw out all that psychological mess, exploring a killer's sick mind.
Psychopaths sell like hotcakes.
This is a story about teachers, their threadbare lives, their struggle. Now, I see her teaching day classes while he teaches night school. Now, the first time they meet...
Look, if you don't mind, I haven't time to listen to the whole plot.
I'll make it short.
I'm sorry, it's your baby now.
Couldn't we work in the evenings? 6 o'clock in the morning. This next month, I'm completely at your disposal. Artie's out of town.
What's Artie got to do with it?
We're engaged.
Oh, well, good for you. You couldn't find a nicer guy.
That's what I think. They're on location in Arizona, making a Western. I'm free every evening and every weekend. We could work at your place if you want.
Look, Betty, it can't be done. It's out. Now stop being chicken-hearted and write that story.
Honest to goodness, I hate you.
And don't make it too dreary. How about this for a situation? She teaches daytimes, he teaches at night, right?
Right.
They don't even know each other, but they share the same room. It's cheaper that way. As a matter of fact, they sleep in the same bed. In shifts, of course.
Are you kidding? Because I think it's good.
So do I.
Well, come on back. Let me show you where it fits in.
So long.
Oh, you.
What's the matter, Max?
I just found out the reason for all those telephone calls from Paramount. It's not Madame they want. It's her car they want to rent.
What?
Well, goodbye, Norma. We'll see what we can do.
I'm not worried. Everything will be fine. The old team together again. Nothing can stop us.
The old team. Yeah. Goodbye, dear.
Goodbye, Mr. DeMille.
Max opens the door and she steps into the car.
How'd it go?
It couldn't have gone better. It's practically set. Of course, he has to finish this picture first. But mine will be his next.
DeMille to his assistant.
Get Gordon Cole. Tell him to forget about our car. Tell him he can get another old car someplace. I'll buy him 5 old cars if necessary.
Norma sits in a steam pod, her perspiring face sticking out of the top.
After that, an army of beauty experts invaded her house on Sunset Boulevard. She went through a merciless series of treatments. Like an athlete training for the Olympic Games, she counted every calorie, went to bed every night at 9. She was absolutely determined to be ready. Ready for those cameras that would never turn.
A mesh mask covers Norma's face as a woman rubs mud over her bare shoulders. Jars of potions cover her dressing table. She sits at a magnifying mirror in a black diaphanous robe over a nightgown. She has a gauze strap under her chin and carefully places another patch of gauze between her eyebrows. She gets up and marches into the room next door where Joe's stretched out on the couch, reading in his shirt sleeves.
Joe, darling, are you there?
Yes, Norma.
Don't turn around. Keep your eyes on the book. I just came to say goodnight. I don't want you to see me. I'm not very attractive.
Good night.
You know, I've lost 0.5 pound since Tuesday.
Good.
I was a little worried about the line in my throat. This woman has done wonders with it.
Good.
You'd better get to bed yourself.
I think I'll read a little longer.
You went out last night, didn't you, Joe?
Why do you say that?
I just happened to know it. I had a nightmare and I screamed for you. You weren't here. What were you?
I went for a walk.
No, you didn't. You took the car.
All right, I drove to the beach. Norma, you don't want me to feel that I'm locked up in this house.
Of course not, Joe. It's just that I don't want to be left alone. Not while I'm under this terrible strain. My nerves are being torn to shreds. All I ask is for you to be a little patient and a little kind.
Norma, I haven't done anything.
Of course you haven't. I wouldn't let you. Good night, darling.
Standing behind him, she strokes his hair, then grips it angrily and sweeps back to her room. He puts down the book and looks at his watch. He glances over to her door and waits. light goes out in her room. Wearing a dark jacket, Joe walks across to the garage, glancing back at the house as he goes.
Yes. I was playing hooky every evening along in there. It made me think of when I was 12 and used to sneak out on the folks to see a gangster picture. This time it wasn't to see a picture. It was to try and write one. That story of mine Betty Schaefer had dug up kept going through my head like a dozen locomotives. So we started working on it. The two of us, nights when the studio was deserted, up in her little cubbyhole of an office.
Through the window of her room, Betty sits at her typewriter while Joe, his tie loosened, paces about. She gets up and he takes over as she goes out to the water cooler on the walkway.
I got the funniest letter from Marty. It's rained every day since they got to Arizona. They rewrote the whole picture for rain and shot half of it. Now the sun is out. Nobody knows when they'll get back.
Good.
What's good about it? I miss him something fierce.
I mean, this is good dialogue along in here. It'll play.
It will?
Sure, especially with lots of music underneath, drowning it out.
Don't you sometimes hate yourself?
Constantly. No, in all seriousness, this is really good. It's fun writing with you.
Well, thanks.
She picks up a cigarette packet from the desk, sees it's empty, and looks around. She turns and spots Joe's open cigarette case. A card in the lid reads, "Mad about the boy, Norma." She takes a cigarette.
Who's Norma?
Who's who?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't usually read private cigarette cases.
Oh, that is from a friend of mine. A middle-aged lady. Very foolish and very generous.
I'll say. This is solid gold.
I gave her some advice on an idiotic script.
Oh, the old familiar story. You help a timid little soul cross a crowded street. She turns out to be a multimillionaire and leaves you all her money.
That's the trouble with you readers. You know all the plots. Now suppose you proofread page 10 while the water boils. Okay.
Okay.
She smiles at him. He returns to the desk and sits down at the typewriter. He puts the case down. Pensively, he places his lighter down on top of the case and spins it. They walk across the dark, deserted lot.
Sometimes, when we got stuck, we'd make a little tour of the drowsing lot. Not talking much. Just wandering down alleys between the sound stages. Or through the sets they were getting ready for the next day's shooting. As a matter of fact, it was on one of those walks when she first told me about her nose.
Look at this street. All cardboard, all hollow, all phony, all done with mirrors. You know, I like it better than any street in the world. Maybe because I used to play here when I was a kid.
What were you, a child actress?
No, I was born just two blocks from the studio, right on Lemon Grove Avenue. My father was head electrician here till he died. Mother still works in wardrobe.
Second generation, huh?
Third. Grandma did stunt work for Pearl White. I come from a picture family. Naturally, they expected me to become a great star. So I had 10 years of dramatic lessons, diction, dancing. Then the studio made a test. Well, they didn't like my nose. Slanted this way a little. So I went to a doctor and had it fixed. They made more tests and they were crazy about my nose. Only they didn't like my acting.
He flicks on his lighter and waves it under her nose.
Nice job.
It should be. It cost me $300.
That's the saddest thing I ever heard.
Oh, not at all. It taught me a little sense. I got a job in the mailroom, worked up to the stenographic. Now I'm a reader.
Come clean, Betty. At night you weep for those lost close-ups, those gala openings.
Not once. What's wrong with being on the other side of the cameras? It's really more fun.
3 cheers for Betty Schaefer. I will now kiss that nose of yours.
If you please.
May I say that you smell real special?
Must be my new shampoo.
That's no shampoo. More like freshly laundered linen handkerchiefs. Like a brand new automobile. How old are you, anyway?
22.
Smart girl. Nothing like being 22. And may I suggest that if we're ever to finish this story, you stay at least 2 feet away from me. The first time you see me coming any closer, I want you to take off a shoe and clunk me on the head with it. Now, back to the typewriters, by way of Washington Square.
She smiles warmly and they amble down the fake street, walking some distance apart. Joe arrives back at the house and drives the car into the garage. He's glancing at the script as he gets out of the car, then turns and sees Max standing in the shadows, watching him.
What is it, Max? Want to wash the car? Or are you doing a little spying in your off hours?
You must be very careful as you cross the patio. Madame may be watching.
How about going up the kitchen stairs and undressing in the dark? Will that do it?
I'm not inquiring where Mr. Gillis goes every night.
Why don't you? I'm writing a script, and I'm going to finish it, no matter what.
It is just that I'm greatly worried about Madame.
Sure you are. And we're not helping her any. Feeding our lies and more lies. Getting herself ready for a picture. What happens when she finds out?
She never will. That is my job, and it has been for a long time. You must understand, I discovered her when she was
16.
I made her a star, and I cannot let her be destroyed.
You made her a star?
Yes. I directed all her early films. There were three young directors who showed promise in those days. D.W. Griffith, Cecil B. DeMille, and Max von Meyerling.
And she's turned you into a servant.
It was I who asked to come back, humiliating as it may seem. I could have continued my career, only I found everything unendurable after she had left me. You see, I was her first husband.
Joe stares at him, shocked. Wearing a white lace robe over a black gown, Norma's pacing in her bedroom, smoking. Tense, she rubs her arms and shoulders. Her face is strained as she melodramatically runs her hands through her short, dark hair. She walks over to the door and goes into Joe's bedroom. Her face breaks into a smile.
You're here, Joe. When'd you come home?
He's in bed asleep. She observes him from the foot of the bed, then leans on the bedpost.
Joe, where were you? Is it a woman? I know it's a woman. Who is she? Why can't I ask you? I must know.
She turns and her eyes widen at the folded paper sticking out of his jacket pocket. It's a copy of the script. She takes it out and holds it up against the dim light, then rushes into her room. She picks up her pince-nez from the bedside table and reads. The words Untitled Love Story by Joseph C. Gillis and Betty Schaefer are written across the top of the page. Nighttime. In Betty's office, she's at the typewriter. Joe's on the sofa scribbling some notes. Betty glances over at him, stops typing, and rests her chin on her arms. She watches him wistfully. Preoccupied, he carries on writing, then looks over.
What's the matter? Betty, wake up. Why are you staring at me like that?
Oh, what? I'm sorry.
What's wrong with you tonight? What is it?
Well, something came up. I don't want to talk about it.
Why not?
He watches her as she gets up from the desk and goes towards the door.
I just don't.
She stands in the doorway looking out. He gets up and comes over to her.
What have you heard? Come on, let's have it. Is it about me?
She turns away and goes along the walkway. He waits a moment, then follows. He stands behind her.
Betty. There's no use running out on it. Let's face it, whatever it is.
I got a telegram from Artie.
From Artie? What's wrong?
He wants me to come on to Arizona. He says it only costs $2 to get married there. It would kind of save us a honeymoon.
Well, why don't you? We can finish the script by Thursday. Stop crying, will you? You're getting married. That's what you wanted.
I don't want it now.
Why not? Don't you love Artie?
Of course I love him. I always will. I'm not in love with him anymore, that's all.
What happened?
You did?
They gaze at one another, then kiss in a passionate embrace. Joe arrives at the house.
It wasn't until I got back to that peculiar prison of mine that I started facing the facts. There it was. Betty Schaefer's future right in the palm of my hand. Betty Schaefer engaged to Artie Green, as nice a guy as ever lived. And she was in love with me. Me.
He goes into his bedroom, carefully closing the door behind him, then turns on the light.
She was a fool not to sense that there was something phony in my setup. And I was a heel not to have told her. But you just can't say those things to somebody you're crazy about. Maybe I'd never have to. Maybe I could get away with it. Get away from Norma. Maybe I could wipe the whole nasty mess right out of my life.
He glances up as he hears dialing from Norma's bedroom, then gets up to listen at the door.
I speak to Miss Betty Schaefer. She must be home by now.
Hey, Betty! Here's that weird-sounding woman again.
Well, what is this anyway? This is Betty Schaefer.
You must forgive me for calling you so late, but I really feel it's my duty. It's about Mr. Gillis. You do know Mr. Gillis. Exactly how much do you know about him? Do you know where he lives? Do you know how he lives? Do you know what he lives on?
Who are you? What do you want? What business is it of yours anyway?
Miss Schaefer, I'm trying to do you a favor. I'm trying to spare you a great deal of misery. Of course, you may be too young to even suspect there are men of his sort. I don't know what he's told you, but he does not live with relatives, nor with friends in the usual sense of the word. Ask him again.
Joe creeps up behind Norma and grabs the phone.
That's right, Betty. Ask me again. This is Joe.
Joe? Where are you? What is this all about?
Well, better yet, why don't you come out and see for yourself? The address is 10,086 Sunset Boulevard.
Norma cowers back on the bed as he glares down at her. He heads to the door, then stops and turns to face her.
Don't hate me, Joe. I did it because I need you. I need you as I've never needed you before. Look at me. Look at my hands. Look at my face. Look under my eyes. How can I go back to work if I'm wasting away under this torment? I don't know what I've been through all these last weeks.
She buries her head in her pillow. Joe watches her impassively and folds his arms, unconvinced by the performance. She raises her head.
I bought myself a revolver, I did. I did. I stood in front of that mirror, but I couldn't make myself do it.
Don't just stand there hating me. Shout at me. Strike me, but don't hate me. Say you don't hate me, Joe.
He stares at her, stretched across the bed, her gauze patches on her forehead and cheekbones. He doesn't react, just paces slowly up and down her room. Betty's being driven by her flatmate.
Here's 10,079, Connie. It must be over there.
Connie turns into Norma's driveway and stops by the door.
Betty,
Let me come along with you, please.
No, I'll be all right.
Betty approaches the entrance. Joe's still pacing in Norma's room. He stops suddenly and Norma looks up.
What are you going to do, Joe? What are you going to do?
She has a gun on her bed. In the hall, Max is putting on his jacket in the dark as he goes to the door. He turns on a light as Joe comes downstairs.
It's all right, Max, I'll take it. Hello, Betty.
I don't know why I'm so scared, Joe. Is there something awful?
Come on in.
He ushers her in past Max and puts his arm around her.
Ever been in one of these old Hollywood palazzos? That's from when they were making $18,000 a week and no taxes. Careful of these tiles, they're slippery. Valentino used to dance here.
This is where you live?
You bet.
Whose house is it?
Hers.
Whose?
Just look around. There's a lot of her spread about. If you don't remember the face, you must have heard the name. Norma Desmond?
That was Norma Desmond on the phone?
Would you like something to drink? There's always champagne on ice. Plenty of caviar.
Why did she call me?
Jealous. Did you ever see so much junk? She had a ceiling brought from Portugal. And look at this.
He pulls on a rope and a painting slides up.
Her own movie theater.
I didn't come here to see a house. What about Norma Desmond?
That's what I'm trying to tell you. This is an enormous place. 8 master bedrooms. A sunken tub in every bathroom. There's a bowling alley in the cellar. It's lonely here. So she got herself a companion. Very simple setup. Older woman who's well-to-do. A younger man who's not doing too well. Can you figure it out yourself?
No.
All right, I'll give you a few more clues.
No! I haven't heard any of this. I never got those telephone calls and I've never been in this house. I'll get your things together and let's get out of here.
All my things? All my 18 suits, all my custom-made shoes, and the 6 dozen shirts, and the cufflinks, and the platinum keychains, and the cigarette cases?
Come on, Joe.
Come on where? Back to a one-room apartment I can't pay for? Back to a story that may sell and very possibly will not?
If you love me, Joe.
Look, sweetie, be practical. I've got a good deal here. A long-term contract with no options. I like it that way. Maybe it's not very admirable. Well, you and Artie can be admirable.
I can't look at you anymore, Joe.
She turns away and puts a hand over her eyes. Joe glances at the ceiling.
How about looking for the exit? This way, Betty.
He takes her by the arm. They leave the room and walk across the hall. He opens the front door, stands behind her, and takes hold of her arm. She doesn't look at him.
Good luck to you, Betty. You can finish that script on the way to Arizona. You and Artie get back, if the two of you ever feel like taking a swim. Here's the pool.
He flicks a switch and the pool is lit up. Her face is wet with tears. She turns to look at him, then walks away down the drive to Connie's car. He watches her distressed, then turns back to the house. He looks up and sees Norma looking down at him from the galleried landing. He goes back in, closing the door after him. She watches him as he climbs calmly up the long staircase. With her gown hanging off one shoulder, she reaches out to him as he walks by her without glancing in her direction.
Thank you, darling. Thank you, Joe.
He goes straight to his bedroom.
Joe.
Norma goes to follow, then catches a glimpse of herself in a hall mirror. Her eyes widen in horror as she sees the gauze patches on her cheeks and brow. She removes them, runs her fingers through her hair and adjusts her gown. She sets her shoulders and approaches the door.
May I come in, Joe? I stopped crying. I'm all right again. Joe, tell me you're not cross. Tell me everything is just as it was, Joe.
She opens the door. He's packing.
Joe. What are you doing, Joe?
Standing in the doorway, she watches him go to the wardrobe, take down a jacket and fold it into his case.
What are you doing?
I'm packing.
She looks aghast.
You're leaving me.
Yes, I am, Norma.
No, you're not. Max! Max!
Thanks for letting me wear the handsome wardrobe. And thanks for the use of all the trinkets.
He flings the watch and cigarette case on the bed.
The rest of the jewelry's in the top drawer.
It's yours, Joe. I gave it to you.
And I take it in a second. Only it's a little too dressy for sitting behind the copy desk in Dayton, Ohio.
These are nothing. You can have anything you want. What is it you want? Money.
Norma, you'd be throwing it away. I don't qualify for the job. Not anymore.
You can't go! Max! Max! I can't face life without you. And you know I'm not afraid to die.
That's between you and yourself.
You think I made that up about the gun, don't you? All right.
She rushes out of the room as he shuts his case. He puts it on the floor, then remembers the cufflinks and starts to take them off. She runs back in.
See? You didn't believe me. Now I suppose you don't think I have the courage.
Oh, sure, if it would make a good scene.
You don't care, do you? But hundreds of thousands of people will care.
Oh, wake up, Norma. You'd be killing yourself to an empty house. The audience left 20 years ago. Now face it.
That's a lie. They still want me.
No, they don't.
What about the studio? What about DeMille?
He was trying to spare your feelings. The studio only wanted to rent your car.
Wanted what?
DeMille didn't have the heart to tell you. None of us has had the heart.
That's a lie. They want me. I get letters every day.
He sees Max.
You tell her, Max. Come on, do her that favor. Tell her there isn't going to be any picture. There aren't any fan letters except the ones you write.
That isn't true. Max!
Madame is the greatest star of them all. I will take Mr. Gillis's bags to the car.
Max picks up the bags while Norma looks on with eyes wide and a demonic smile.
You heard him? I'm a star.
Norma, you're a woman of 50. Now grow up. There's nothing tragic about being 50. Not unless you try to be 25.
The greatest star of them all.
Goodbye, Norma.
No one ever leaves a star. That's what makes one a star.
She clutches the gun to her chest, then runs out after Joe, who's halfway down the stairs.
Joe! Joe!
He walks out into the front garden with Norma running after him.
Joe!
She shoots him in the back, but he keeps walking. He staggers towards the pool. He falls into the illuminated pool. Max comes running over and sees his body floating face down in the water. Max runs over to Norma, who's leaning theatrically against a pillar.
The stars are ageless, aren't they?
Morning and police around the pool.
Well, this is where you came in. Back at that pool again. The one I always wanted. It's dawn now, and they must have photographed me 1,000 times. Then they got a couple of pruning hooks from the garden and fished me out, ever so gently. Funny how gentle people get with you once you're dead. They beached me like a harpoon baby whale and started to check the damage, just for the record.
They roll his body over.
By this time, the whole joint was jumping. Cops, reporters, neighbors, passers-by. As much hoop-de-doo as we get in Los Angeles when they open a supermarket. Even the newsreel guys came roaring in. Here was an item everybody could have some fun with. The heartless so-and-sos. What would they do to Norma? Even if she got away with it in court. Crime of passion, temporary insanity. Those headlines would kill her. Forgotten star, a slayer.
aging actress, yesterday's glamour queen.
His body is carried away on a stretcher. Inside, the hallway is packed with people. A cop makes a phone call.
Coroner's office. I want to speak to the coroner. Who's on this phone?
I am. Now get off. This is more important. Time City Desk. Hedda Hopper speaking. I'm talking from the bedroom of Norma Desmond. Don't bother with a rewrite, man. Take it direct. Ready? As day breaks over the murder house, Norma Desmond, famous star of yesteryear, is in a state of complete mental shock. A curtain of silence seems to have fallen around her. She sits in the silken boudoir of her house on Sunset Boulevard.
Was it a sudden quarrel? Had you ever had any trouble between you before?
If it was a quarrel, how come this gun was right there?
This guy, where did you meet him for the first time? Where did he come from? Who is he? Did you hate him? Had you ever thought of doing something like this before?
Was theft involved? Did you catch him trying to steal something? Or find he had stolen something?
The newsreel men are here with the cameras.
Tell them to go fly a kite. This is no time for cameras. Now, Miss Desmond, is there anything you want to tell us?
Cameras? What is it, Max?
He steps over to her at her dressing table where she's looking into a mirror.
The cameras have arrived.
They have. Tell Mr. DeMille I'll be on the set at once.
What is this?
A cop.
Well, it's one way to get her downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Let's have the car right outside. Okay? Everything will be ready, madame.
Thank you, Max. You'll pardon me, gentlemen, but I must get ready for my scene.
What's happening up there?
Any statement?
Why did you do it?
Is your confession?
Yes. Everything set up, gentlemen?
Just about.
Lights ready?
All set.
Max directs. Tripod cameras are set up at the foot of the stairs. Norma emerges from her room with police and journalists. Her hair, a bare shoulder, and a sweep of fabric trailing from the other shoulder are sprinkled with glitter.
Quiet, everybody! Lights!
A light shines on her face from below.
Are you ready, Norma?
What is the scene? Where am I?
This is the staircase of the palace.
Oh, yes. Yes. Down below, they're waiting for the princess. I'm ready.
All right. Cameras. Act! So they were turning after all. Those cameras. Life, which can be strangely merciful, had taken pity on Norma Desmond. The dream she had clung to so desperately had enfolded her.
She makes a stately progress down the staircase, her face to camera. Halfway down the stairs, she raises her arms in a balletic gesture, watched with pity by the people around her. Max looks away in pain.
I can't go on with the scene. I'm too happy. Mr. DeMille, do you mind if I say a few words? Thank you. I just want to tell you all how happy I am to be back in the studio, making a picture again. You don't know how much I've missed all of you. And I promise you I'll never desert you again. Because after Salome, we'll make another picture and another picture. You see, this is my life. It always will be. There's nothing else. Just us. And the cameras. And those wonderful people out there in the dark. All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Max is nearly in tears. With her eyes wide and her head thrown back, Norma prowls sinuously towards the bank of cameras. The end.